Start some trouble and call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to play some music tonight. What the hell? I'm going to give this one got me going. Play a little rock song. 205, McMonagle here with you on the Fan. 2 hours down, three more to go on our five-hour midnight ride. Coming off a Met loss. The worst loss of the season, blowing a five-run lead to the Oakland A's. A team that has played better, a team that offensively has scored in the series. And while the Mets did score six runs, and while the Mets offense did, you know, jump out to that five-run lead, and yeah, the pitching walked everybody, and it was a brutal loss that way, and the bullpen without Budo, who should have been able to pitch in this game, instead was pitching 2 days earlier. When he came into the game, they were losing 7-1. And that's the biggest thing that bothers me about this game, is the inability, like, that's a big-time mistake in my mind from Mendoza, which I get, you know, it's not easy to manipulate that kind of weapon. Like, but when he's your best weapon, right now the Mets need him in games they're going to win or try and win, not games just to, oh, he hasn't thrown in 4 days. I get that. And ideally you do want him to pitch every so often, but when he can't pitch for 2 days after he throws, because that's his style and that's what he's been and that's what he's used to and that's the way he's operating right now, you can't just throw him in a meaningless game. You never know when you need him. And right now, to lose that series heading into a Miami series, they absolutely have to win before going to play Baltimore, who has, you know, who's a half game off along with the Yankees for being the best team in baseball or having the best record in baseball, followed by a seven game stretch of San Diego and Arizona, the two hottest teams in baseball. It's time to win. That was an enormous loss yesterday. Brutal, 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 brutal loss in every way. 888-808-1019. You got Alvarez and his funk still continuing as he pitched hit for McNeil early in the seventh inning and then came up in the ninth to finalize the game. Pete Alonso unable to come through with a big hit. The bullpen and Reed Garrett. Reed Garrett. Remember when he was the best reliever in baseball for 2 weeks? And this, wow, where'd they get this guy? No longer. 888-808-1019. We're also talking a little bit of movies. As I heard, I found out that, saw the story that Nicolas Cage, of all people, is going to be playing John Madden in a Madden biop, which I think the idea of having a Madden movie is great. I just, Nicolas Cage. Now, he might surprise me, but I just, for some reason, I can't see it. So if you think of any other, you know, your favorite or least favorite roles of famous, of actual living people, of people who are playing famous people or people we all knew, let me know. I'm trying to think of good ones. I always really thought Leonardo DiCaprio played a great Howard Hughes. The movie overall wasn't that good, but I thought his performance in that movie was really good, playing that kind of shut-in and with all the ticks and all the things that went with Howard Hughes. I thought that was a good one. There have been so many that won Oscars, so just we can always weave that in as we get you through the course of the next 3 hours. And Tommy in Astoria wants to do so. What's up, Tommy?
Hey, Chris. How you doing?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Hope you have a great vacation.
Thank you.
And I'm disappointed early in the week. Chris, wear that shirt. Don't worry about what anybody thinks.
Oh, right. I know.
It's not worth getting sunburned. I've been there.
Oh, it's the worst. Plus, it's just not good for your skin, man. It's terrible for you.
I didn't even know they make shirts just for the pool. I gotta look into that.
Yeah, they're called rash guards, apparently. They're designed with like SPF in them as well as just being a shirt. Yeah.
A movie point and then my one quick Met. I'll do the Met point first.
Sure.
I don't think it's a big deal about this girl throwing out the pitch.
No, it's ridiculous.
If they only won this game, it's not an issue. People getting on a high horse. Who cares? It's ridiculous. The other thing is what's killed the Mets, and I think I talked to you a couple weeks ago, Arizona is the team that we had to beat out. They don't lose.
I mean,
they went into a stretch against the Guardians and the Phillies, winning 1-6 out of 7.
I know.
You can't compete with that.
No, and I mean, I don't think they're gone. Forget it. It's over. You're not competing with
them.
They
don't lose. It'll lose. And
they're gone, and San Diego's gone.
Atlanta. See, this is what I was afraid of. If it comes down to us in Atlanta, We're not beating Atlanta. I hate to say it. We're not beating these guys. But listen,
well, I mean, then you think the season's over because I don't think you can catch San Diego. It's about beating Atlanta.
I've said all along that I try to be reasonable, that if we stayed in the race until late in the game, you know, late until September, I'd be happy. I just don't think I don't want to fall out of it totally, though. That's the only thing. Right. I just don't want to be like 6 or 7 games out. The movie, Christian Bale played Dick Cheney in a movie called Vice, which was amazing. And when it first came out, they said, how is Christian Bale going to play Dick Cheney? And he pulled it off amazingly.
Well, you see, here's the difference, though, and I'll let you finish your point. I saw the movie. I don't remember the movie being amazing, but I remember him being very good. But Christian Bale is such a... And I know Nicolas Cage can be a very good actor. He's won an Oscar. But Christian Bale's a chameleon, man. The Christian Bale, he'll put on 60 pounds. He'll lose 80 pounds. He'll be Batman and put on 20 pounds of muscle and then do The Mechanic or whatever that movie was called, The Machinist.
Yeah.
And he's 92 pounds. Like, he's crazy. He's one of those guys who can just... Daniel Day-Lewis. If you told me Daniel Day-Lewis was going to play John Madden, I'd be like, wow, he'll be phenomenal. But, you know, because that's just who he is. But, I mean...
Can you help settle a bet for me? One quick movie.
I can try. Yeah, sure.
Okay. Buddy of mine have a Usual Suspects, right?
Oh, love Usual Suspects.
Okay. Is Usual Suspects a great movie or a good movie with a great ending?
I think it's a great movie.
Okay.
I think it's an overall great movie. I don't think it's just an average. And thank you for the call, Tommy. I don't think it's an average movie with a great ending. And it is a great ending. Don't get me wrong. It is a great, great ending. But no, I'm into the whole thing. I thought, you know, Gabriel Byrne gave you a great performance along with obviously Kevin Spacey. And I love the whole thing. I'm a huge fan of Usual Suspects. For some reason, I remember playing Trivial Pursuit, like the DVD edition. I don't know. I was playing it with my uncle, who I'm actually going to go see this weekend in Myrtle Beach. Looking forward to it. And it was like, tell the movie by a frame. Like, they just put a still frame of a shot of the movie. And it was like, just the window on the ship at the end of the movie, and it's like a dark thing, and it's just like the door with like the circle glass window on it. And I was like, Usual Suspects. And I'll never forget his face. He was just like, how in the world? I'm like, because I watch the movie all the time. I love it. The actor who plays Kobayashi, the lawyer, I forget his name. He was in Romeo and Juliet too with Leonardo DiCaprio, which I thought was a great, I love that Romeo and Juliet. I think that's a great version. He's terrific in it. He was in The Town too. He played like a mobster in The Town who's threatening Ben Affleck. He was a great actor in that movie. I thought it was fantastic. Smokey in Manhattan. What's up, Smokey?
Hey, listen.
What's up?
You guys are nuts. The subject of who was the greatest player ever, in baseball.
Who's the best baseball player who's ever played the game? That's what I've been talking about.
Best baseball player who ever played the game would have to be Babe Ruth, because Babe Ruth's the first one to pitch and hit.
Yep.
Now, I want to ask you a question, because y'all talked about last year. What was Ohtani's pitching record last year?
Ohtani's pitching record last year. Hold on. I got his... let me make sure this is Ohtani. Yeah, Ohtani. Ohtani's pitching last year... he pitched 132 innings. He had a whip of 1.06. Which is the ERA? Oh, he had an ERA of 3.14. That's it.
It was his win
10-5 last year. It's the year before was his great pitching performance where he was in 2022, 15-9, he had a 2.33 ERA. So, I mean, we're talking about the last 3 years, 3.1 ERA, 2.3 ERA, 3.1 ERA. I mean, that's, and the strikeouts per nine, 10.8. He led the American League last year in strikeouts per nine with 11.9. Like, home run per nine, 0.08. Like, last year, 11.4 strikeout per nine. Like, all of his numbers are legitimately, he's not the best pitcher in the league, but he's one of the best pitchers in the league.
Okay, I agree with that. Now, Yep. Turn off the radio.
You're trying to listen to the radio. Turn off your radio. Let's just do it through the phone.
Of many years, I can go with you saying he's the greatest player.
Yeah, so I'm sorry, Smokey. I can't listen to the back of the radio. It ruins the call. Call me back in 2 weeks. No, I'm just kidding. Listen, I don't know how else to put it. This is where I think we have the fundamental misunderstanding between so many of you. You think he has to have the greatest career to be the GOAT or to be the greatest. I disagree fundamentally. I'm not putting his Hall of Fame. This isn't a Hall of Fame competition. I'm not like, I'm just saying, when I watching Shohei Ohtani the last 2 years, nobody's ever played baseball better than Shohei Ohtani did for those 2 years.
If he retired today, is he a Hall of Famer?
I mean, it's close. He's going to have three. If he retires after the season, he's got three MVPs. He's got three MVPs. How many three-time MVPs are not in the Hall of Fame? See if you can do that for me. See if there's a three-time MVP who's not in the Hall of Fame. There's nobody else who had such a shot, a shotgun career or a shining career, a shooting star type of career where he was fantastic, but for a short period of time. Who else has won three MVPs and not been in the Hall of Fame? Like, we're not talking about a guy who just does both. We're talking about a guy who, outside of Aaron Judge, he's the best hitter in the sport. And when he's a starting pitcher, he's a legitimate ace. Top five, top 10, wherever you want to put him, he's an ace pitcher. We'll see what Yamamoto and Glasnow can be, but there's a chance next year he's the best pitcher on the Dodgers as well as hitting, like, on the super team. He's going to be their best hitter and their best pitcher. And they're considered a super team. Jose and Newberg, what's up, Jose?
Yo,
what's up?
Malcolm X, Denzel.
Yes.
He became Malcolm.
That's a very good one. Yes. That is
insane. Yep. It was just insane, the performance. And yep. I wasn't even that big of a Spike Lee fan up to that point, by the way.
You know what it is?
You know what it is? Yeah, he was amazing.
A lot of people like him in The Hurricane as well, as Hurricane Carter, the boxer.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But he looked like Malcolm X. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, you're telling people that their childhood baseball gods aren't as good as this guy.
Yes.
And it's hard pill to swallow.
Yep.
Griffey was the guy. He was the guy. Griffey doesn't pitch. And this guy, Ohtani, when we were creating a player on the video games, mm-hmm. what did we do?
Right,
he was 99 pitcher. He was 99 pitcher, 99 batter.
Right. That's true.
You know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And again, yeah.
We've never seen it.
No, and even, again, Ken Griffey Jr., great player. He's got one MVP. And now MVPs aren't the be all end all. I'm not saying they are.
Yeah.
It is a vote. Yeah. It is a vote. It's not a black and white thing. But like I could just tell you, like even now looking at his, there is pretty much as much black type, which is on Baseball Reference means leading the league. There is as much black type in the last 3 or 4 years of Shohei Ohtani's career than there is in Ken Griffey's entire career. It's just, I mean, I'm trying to look at, like, Ken Griffey Jr. had some of the same actual numbers, but Ken Griffey Jr. never led the league in OPS. Never once. Never led the league in OPS. Shohei Ohtani has led the league in OPS twice.
You know,
last year, and he's going to do it again this year. Like
it's stunning how good he is.
Yes,
And like you said, I think I understand what you're saying. The pinnacle of a baseball player, I think, has been reached with him. And right. We haven't seen that since 100-plus years ago.
Right.
And they haven't built a better, pure, this guy's a baseball player than him at the moment. It's incredible.
Right. That's exactly how I view it. Me and you see it the same, Jose. Like, I don't even think some of the callers are wrong with what they're saying. We just have a fundamental disunderstanding of what I'm saying. All right, so I'll get back to that in a second. So how many guys, is there a Major League Baseball player in history who's won three MVPs that is not in the Hall of Fame?
There are two. But there's circumstances with
sure.
that.
Sure.
Alex okay. Rodriguez and Barry Bonds. There are only
I knew Barry Bonds, and Alex Rodriguez, right, so yes.
There are only two-time MVPs who have not made it, and there are no circumstances attached. Those are Dale Murphy and Juan Gonzalez.
Right.
And then there's like 50 other guys who have won MVPs.
Does Trout have three MVPs?
Trout has three, and that's the one I was going to bring up.
Yeah, because he's still playing.
I don't think he makes it, though.
I don't know. I think he does.
As of right now, he might.
I think he does. And we all know Alex Rodriguez and Barry Bonds would, if not for steroids.
Exactly.
Yeah. So there's no other three-time MVP who hasn't made the Hall of Fame. I understand it's in a short period of time.
And but, Pujols isn't in, but he will be in once eligible. He's a three-time MVP.
He's a three-time MVP going to the Hall of Fame on roller skates, to quote the great Mike Francesa. On roller skates. Ray in Brooklyn. What's up, Ray?
See, Mac, you're pretty much my, my even keel objective Yankee fan on this station because you don't flip-flop day-to-day like fans do. Like,
right. I stay the course.
No names. But listen, me and you have agreed on everything, Cashman. Boom. The only one thing we disagree on, and we already had this conversation, so we won't revisit it, is Clay Holmes. But as far as like the best athletes of all time, real quick, I'm gonna say Bo Jackson, but I don't think the disparity between him and Deion Sanders is as big as we think, because Deion Sanders was probably more dominant than him, like as dominant. In relation to football versus Bo Jackson, Jackson was versus Deion in baseball, so they kind of even out a little bit.
The career was so short in football, and the position is a little bit different, and there are so many great. It's a tough. The defensive back is a very difficult position to play, and he was the shutdown corner of all shutdown corners.
The
I agree.
Greatest of all time.
Yeah, I mean, you're not wrong on that. He was at his position. You could argue. He's the greatest of all time. I don't think anybody would argue Bo Jackson was the greatest of all time at running back. So I agree with you, but I think he was pretty damn close to being as good a football player in his time, and he was a far, far better baseball player.
Yeah, I don't.
But you're right. You're right.
With you. I think it's a little closer. The gap.
Right. Deion Sanders could return kicks, no doubt, and Deion Sanders is the shutdown. I mean, I was actually reading a book. My son rented a book called "The Sports Goats." And we were going through the NFL GOATs, and we were going through all the different things. It went by position, offensive linemen, defensive linemen. And for defensive backs, they would do two players for each one. They would talk about two different players from each position. And I should know the name. I'm blanking on it now. But the cornerback was from the Vikings. I'm forgetting who it was. And he had 13 interceptions his rookie year, which is still a record. He was a ball hawk and blah, blah, blah. And then they get to Deion Sanders, and the book says, now Deion doesn't have any interceptions because no one threw the ball near him. I was just like,
exactly. That's
exactly right. He took away half the field. That's how impressive Deion Sanders was. So, yeah, I don't disagree with you. I still would say that and for my money, I would think Bo Jackson was the better athlete. But maybe it's closer than I say it is.
Yeah, and maybe Bo Jackson gets the edge too, because like when you look at him, he's more physically imposing and impressive also. So I guess that kind of factors into it a little bit too. Mm-hmm. As far as like the Babe Ruth thing, you clarified where you're coming from. Initially I was, pretty much against your argument, but now it's pretty close. I'm going to say this because you're saying like you clarified that the last year or two. Now the thing is that I didn't do a deep dive into Babe Ruth because you already did the clarification and I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But like I would have to look to see, because Babe Ruth was so dominant as a pitcher. His ERA is like 2.2, which is almost an entire run less than, you know, career-wise, over 800 more innings than Shohei Ohtani. So I would have to think there might be one or two seasons in there that were equally as impressive as what Shohei Ohtani has done the last year or so. And then the other thing would be availability. Babe Ruth had a rubber arm. I mean, he was just a rubber, you know, rubber man, like the way he was put together. And Shohei Ohtani doesn't have the availability as a pitcher, you know, but definitely when he's on the mound, you know, he's great. Like you said, he's pretty darn close to who Gerrit Cole is, and not too far behind Aaron Judge. Although I will say this, there's not a GM in the world that would trade Aaron Judge. Like, if, you know, taking age away, Aaron Judge, the everyday player, fielder, you know, the best right fielder in the game when he was in right field, and best hitter in the game for Shohei Ohtani. So it may not be like a huge disparity, but remember, Aaron Judge definitely is he's definitely not even, you know, in my opinion, I don't think it's necessarily that close. I mean, remember last year, Judge coming off of 62 home runs, he was on pace for 60 some odd home runs again.
I just want to make, I understand your point. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just want to, because we got a break here. You're saying that no one would trade Judge for Shohei Ohtani. No one would send away Judge and bring in Ohtani. Is that what you said?
Right. If you know, age notwithstanding, I'm talking about just the everyday player, not the pitcher. Like, if Shohei Ohtani, taking away the pitcher.
Okay. Yeah, well, if you're taking away the pitcher, no. Judge is the better hitter. Right, I agree with that. But I think when you take in, like, if you asked, like, maybe not the Yankees now, he's the captain, it's been around, but just, like, I think if you ask GMs around baseball who they'd rather have, Shohei Ohtani or Aaron Judge, I think you'd be surprised how many people would say Shohei Ohtani.
No, I wouldn't be surprised, because when you factor in the pitching, it makes sense.
Well, there you go. And he's younger. His offensive, you make it sound like Judge, I mean, Judge is great, but we don't take into account how great, like, Judge right now has 43 home runs. He's hitting .330. He's got 100 RBIs. He's having a monster season. His OPS, like, but if you look at, like, Ohtani's just behind him in everything. He's got 37 home runs, leads the National League. He's hitting .295. It's not like he's hitting .240 doing it. Last year, he hit .304. Like, you know, he's got 1,000 OPS, which leads the National League. He's got a .617 slugging, leads the National League. He's got a .178 OPS plus, leads the National League. 287 total bases, leads the National League. Like, he's the best offensive, like, this side of Judge, he's the best offensive player. And Judge is having a great, like, last year, you want to talk about healthy and everything. Last year, his numbers were better in the American League last year. Now, Judge got hurt, but 44 home runs, best. Led the league in home runs. He had .304. Led the league in slugging. Led the league in OPS plus. Led the league in total bases. I mean, he leads the league in everything over the last 2 or 3 years. I mean, offensively, he's come into his own, where he's almost as good as Judge, and he pitches. It's actually bonkers. We don't give him enough credit, especially, you know, he plays on the West Coast. We don't think about it. He is crazy good. 227, McMonagle here with you. We could talk a little bit about Aaron Judge as well, because as great as Aaron Judge is, it seems like the conversation now is, you know, Brett had it with me a little bit, that if you listened to Brett in Long Island yesterday when he called, that Bernie Williams is a better player than Aaron Judge because he's won a championship. Where do we stack Aaron Judge if he never wins a championship? I'm fascinated by the question because it is an interesting one. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the fan. We'll come back, continue to take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan. Sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the Free Odyssey app. Tell me, did you think it'd be all right?
I can just crash here tonight.
The Gin Blossoms, my mother's favorite. And there's, you know, she's too old for the Gin Blossoms, but she loved the Gin Blossoms. That and Genesis, those are really the only two musical acts I know my mother loves. I guess the Beatles and everything. So. Got most of my music from Dad, but she loves the Gin Blossoms. 888-808-1019. A little conversation about baseball. You know, I want to talk about Judge, too, a little bit, because, you know, yesterday, the 300th home run, how important and how great he's been, just is off the charts good. I mean, fastest man ever to 300 home runs. And, you know, so much of the conversation yesterday became about what it's like to watch him and, you know, and where he stands on the Yankee pantheon. And, you know, I understand he hasn't won a championship. And ultimately, I 100% agree with this. He'll never be as beloved because he's a Yankee, because Yankees are about championships. He'll never be as beloved as a Jeter who's won, you know, five championships. He'll never be as beloved as some others. It won't be the level of fond memories and love, but I mean, I still think that even if he never wins, and by the way, let's also say this. Like, I've heard Keith say this a lot. I've heard others say this a lot. Stack the deck. He has to win a championship. You have to put a team around him to win a championship. It's about time. Brian Cashman, it's up to you. The disaster of Brian Cashman putting together a roster that's not good enough to win a World Series with Judge is a disgrace and everything like that. And, I mean, on the surface, yes, that's accurate. But here's the thing. Part of that is Judge has to perform in the postseason. I mean, let's just be fair about it. He hasn't hit against the Astros at all. If Aaron Judge, and I'm not, believe me, the people who booed him are morons. I'm not saying boo the man. And I do think it's a matter of when he finally does have that monster breakthrough postseason. But, and hopefully it's this year. But a couple years ago when they got swept by the Astros, you know, I don't know if they win the series, but it's a hell of a lot closer if he hits the same way Bader did. Like, oh, you got to put a team around him that's better. If he hit like Bader, like, maybe they would. If that fly ball in game two goes into the seats instead of to the warning track, they win that game and maybe the series is different. Like, it's up to him, too. He had a miserable postseason 2 years ago. He's had some good series, but particularly against the Astros, he has not hit. 2019, if he has a great series, maybe they do make it to the World Series that year. So it's part of it is like, you have the great player. And yeah, you might say at the end of it, oh, you got to put a roster. It's about time the Yankees put a roster around him good enough to win the World Series. I think they did in 2019. They just didn't win. And he's part of that. So let me just say that first, but let's also just say, if he continues to have seasons like this, if he has another four or five seasons like this, Don Mattingly was able to be loved by Yankee fans as much as Jeter. It's amazing. I don't know why exactly. He was the only one. There was a stretch of exciting run-scoring baseball, and he was the best player in baseball. Judge is the best hitter in baseball. If Judge plays another 5-6 years and puts this up and hits, you know, 550 home runs and is widely considered one of the great players of all time and year after year as captain gives the Yankees MVP. If he wins four or five MVPs and plays like this and hits 550, 600 home runs, maybe it's plausible. It's not likely, but plausible. But never gets that championship. I still think he should go down. I mean, it's a team sport. Yes, he's got to be better, no doubt, but it's also not just up to him. And I think we've gotten so crazy about all it's about is championships and all about is the postseason. Ted Williams isn't as beloved anymore. If he doesn't, if you have Ted Williams' career now, it's considered a disappointment. Where when Ted Williams was playing, he was a freaking hero. And beloved in Boston. Ted Williams having Ted Williams' career hitting 400, doing all this for last place Red Sox teams, nobody would care. Like, I think we go too far down the rabbit hole of it's all about championships when we look at it this way. Like, yeah, he needs to win. I get it. And he'll never be on the same list as Derek Jeter if he doesn't. He'll never be Mariano Rivera if he doesn't. But is he not one of the greats? Is he not Don Mattingly or better? Is he not beloved? It's a fascinating thing. I understand it. But we also, like, you got to just appreciate the game. Like, right now, far too many Yankee fans are not taking, like, I talked about it yesterday. There's a guy on Yankee Twitter. I forget his name. In the last 15 years, give me one thing a Yankee fan has to smile about. Like, if you can't smile unless you win a championship, then what the hell are we doing? Like, honestly, pack up the damn sport. Like, it's stupid. I know it's all or nothing with the New York Yankees. It's about championships. But now you're telling me I can't enjoy it? I can't enjoy a regular season watching Judge and Soto hit back-to-back and watching what we've seen from these two players. I can't smile? I can't have a little bit of fun, even if it ultimately ends in disappointment? I can't. Like, if I can't enjoy the regular season, if I can't enjoy, you know, I mean, I know it's cliched. Is life not about the ride? It's about the five-hour rides, man. It's about the midnight rides. It's not about necessarily always the destination. It can be disappointing. It can get people fired, right? We want to fire Boone and Cashman. Fine. I'm open. Like, if they don't win eventually, yeah, you got to win. But in 15 years, the Yankee fan has had nothing to smile about. If you can't smile watching Aaron Judge and Juan Soto hit back to back, then why are we doing this? If it's just about the championship, tune in October.
The difference with Mattingly and Ted Williams is not they didn't make the playoffs. Making the playoffs and underperforming is worse than not making it.
No, I mean, that's fair, granted, but there are also more opportunities to make the playoffs. I'm sure Don Mattingly absolutely would have been in the playoffs if they had wild cards. And who knows, he did thrive in the one playoff series he actually played in. He had 400 in that series against Seattle, but they lost 3 games in a row. They had a 2-game lead and blew it.
Before I was born, of course.
Clearly. Were your parents alive? I'm not even sure. 888.
My parents are still older than you.
But by this much. I just missed them.
Barely, yeah.
Yeah. 888-808-1019. Val in the Bronx. What's up, Val?
Brother Mac, what's going on, Dan? How you doing this morning?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. You know, I want to revisit something from yesterday, but before I get into that, if I could just say two things really quickly. First one being, you know, what you're talking about with Ohtani, the crazy thing is, so you're saying that, I mean, he has a chance this year to get his third MVP, right?
Yes.
And the way, from everything that you see as far as his numbers pitching-wise, he's always in that top tier. So there's still a chance that the dude could have as many MVPs as he has already on his belt and still turn around and win a Cy Young Award at the same time in maybe a season or two from now. Like, the kind of things that he could put up on his resume when he's all said and done, that stuff is like, I mean, it goes beyond amazing. And it gets to really where, like, that whole conversation with the longevity and all that stuff like that, if you assume and project that he actually does play a full career, at that point, that's really the only part that you have to save your conversation or your argument.
Well, I mean,
that's
gonna be gone. Well, let me just stop you for a second, because here, like, I just thought of this as you were talking. For me, when people make the longevity argument, is there nothing that could be done in one season that could make you say, wow, this is the best baseball player I've ever seen? Like, if next year, just say Ohtani or someone else, some rookie comes up and hits 85 home runs and wins the MVP, hits 85 home runs, hits 360, drives in 175 runs, and wins the Cy Young with a 1.1 ERA. Can I not call him the greatest baseball player I've ever seen because he only did it for 1 year? Is there no line of demarcation where I can say this is so brilliant that this is the best I've ever seen?
Trust me when I tell you, Mac, I totally understand your argument, and I totally, totally agree with you. The point I'm making is that if that's the only leg that you have to stand on, give it a little time. That's going to be gone too. So that's what I'm trying to say.
Right, I got you.
Additionally, too, before I get to my last point, additionally, too, you were talking that thing with Judge. You know, it's funny. I heard part of the morning show because I just kept listening and kept listening. They brought up something that actually made me wonder for a second or two, and it goes right back to what you're saying. It's just something that has not been done for Judge yet because he hasn't exploded in the postseason. But they threw Reggie's name in there and was like, you know, Reggie Jackson or Aaron Judge. And for a second, you heard, like, I can't remember who he was going around with or who else was in the studio with him, but people were like, It took like it was a kind of question. And the thing that made the difference, because the first thing that comes to your mind when you say Reggie is the 3 home runs in the World Series game. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So to your point, like, you know, some of that stuff just has not happened yet. But God willing, it soon will. You know what I'm saying? And the last thing I wanted to say, and this speaks to, and this is why I love all the 3 major sports. I follow them right down to the end. You know what I'm saying? The best time of year for me is when all of them are going on at the same time. And I have to figure out which one I need to watch now and which one I'm going to listen to someplace else.
Right.
But at the same time, one of the things that makes baseball such a sweet sport, we talked about it yesterday, and the more that I thought about it, it was such a little subtle difference. You know what I'm saying? And that's why you kind of got to be like, nah, he's got to be scratching his head after the moment and thinking, why did I even do that? But let's talk about how many times Soto was actually walked in front of Judge. Like, and he could have done it so, like, you know, there's so many times when it's arguable or debatable when you're listening to the broadcast or you're watching it even at home. Is it that they're just simply not trying to throw Soto a strike?
Right.
And they're just not giving it something to hit?
Yeah.
Or is it that, like, you intentionally walk the guy and that would stir up the emotion? Like, it, that subtle little difference, that little finesse thing where you could have just been like, just pitch around him. Just, you know, don't give him anything to hit. He could have ended up walking the same way. And who's to say that it would have had the same effect? Like, I thought about it after. I'm like, that's why you really are such a, like, you had to, that was an idiot moment.
No, that was, I hear you saying, because it pissed off Judge when you could have just pitched around him and not pissed off Judge. But, I mean, because you don't want to make the mistake. Pitching around is one thing. Like, he's walked in front of Judge a bunch, and some of them have been on, you know, five pitch walks. I don't think it's intentionally trying to pitch around Soto. It's, I got to be careful with them. They're so good. And especially when they were really going bad offensively, you could try and be careful to both of them. If you put them on, that's fine. Like, I don't think it's necessarily, I'm afraid of Soto. I'll take my chances with the Judge, so I'm pitching around Soto. It's that Soto's great. I'm not going in the middle of the plate. I'm going to nibble. And if I miss, I miss. And then I'll treat Judge the same way. And that's why it was so important to get a cleanup hitter. And Wells has really kind of answered that a little bit, hopefully. And we'll see if Stanton coming back. But, like, that's kind of answered the question a bit. But it's, the amount of walks Soto has in front of Judge. I mean, every walk has been in front of Judge for the most part. It's not, hey, I'll deal with Judge next. It's that I'm not throwing this guy a strike. And then I'll treat Judge the same way. I'm not throwing him a strike. Like, there are guys who nibble and just that's what ends up happening. But, walking Soto in front of Judge is a interesting thing. And it leads me to a quick thing on a rule change, because the intentional walk thing has gotten a lot of talk about a need for a rule change in Major League Baseball. And, you know, everybody wants to somehow curtail it. I mean, I don't remember this conversation. Maybe it was had. I don't remember this conversation during Barry Bonds when he was being intentionally walked 120 times while Judge has been intentionally walked, like, I don't know, 13. But suddenly everybody wants to change the rule. Suddenly everyone wants to make teams pay and that you can't be doing this crap. And I just don't know if there's a way to legislate it. How are you going to legislate a pitcher trying to throw strikes? You are going to force a major league pitcher to throw strikes to Aaron Judge. Force him. I don't know how you could do that. You can't do it. You can't force to throw strikes. You're going to penalize them, and like you just can't force players to pitch to someone. It's not right. I don't believe in it, even as a Judge fan and a Yankee fan. I do not believe it's right to tell a pitcher he has to throw strikes. If there's a game plan to pitch around someone, that's the game plan. Like, it's up to the Yankees to make them pay for that game plan. I don't know how else to put it. You can't manufacture, you can't make someone throw strikes. There's a penalty for throwing four balls before you throw three strikes. It's called a walk. That's it. And if you make some rule, if you want to intentionally walk somebody, one's fine. Twice, he gets second base. Third, he gets, the third time you do it, he gets third base. The fourth time you do it, he gets a home run. Like, what? Whatever, it's stupid. Then people just pitch around him. And then you're going to say, oh, you threw him balls. I'm trying to throw strikes. Like, it's, you can't, it makes no sense. And neither does this other rule, too. As you got wind, they were talking about on the Met broadcast. I saw John Boy talking about it. We're trying to change baseball for the better, and I get it. And I applaud Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred for attempting to do it. And I think the pitch clock, by the way, the Met game earlier today was the longest game, the longest nine-inning game in the history of the pitch clock era the last couple of years. How about that? 3:45 or something. The longest pitch clock era nine-inning baseball game yesterday, Mets and A's. But I understand we want to have starting pitchers go longer, right? And so that's the genesis of this new rule. They are thinking about a rule. I don't think it would ever come into place because it's just idiotic. They're considering a rule where they would force starting pitchers to go at least six innings. Now the caveat is he's got to throw at least 100 pitches, got to give up less than four runs. If he throws over 100 pitches, he can come out before the sixth. If he gives up more than four runs, he can come out after six. But they're trying to eliminate the, oh, our pitcher's cruising or our pitcher's pitching well, but we don't let him face the team the third time around, you know, and that kind of thing, which has dramatically shifted in the last 10 years. They were showing the stats on the Met broadcast. This year, 33% of starts qualify for that set of circumstances where pitchers are being pulled before the sixth inning without throwing 100 pitches and without giving up four runs. 33% of starts end that way, where a starting pitcher is still being effective, has not given up more than four runs and has not thrown 100 pitches and is still being pulled from the game. Where 6 years ago, it was half of that. It is the new strategy in baseball to get guys out because the numbers show the third time through the lineup is dangerous and the bullpen arms are better than ever. But I think we all kind of agree that the pitcher going deeper into the game is better for baseball in some ways. You would see strikeouts come down. We would see probably runs go up. We would see different things. And we would see an importance on starting pitching. I don't know how you enforce this, though. Like, I don't know if I like this rule. Do you really want to, like, we've already added the three batter minimum to the relief pitcher. So, I mean, you want to take the hands, you want to take the decision making out of the manager's hands? Like, it's up to the manager to do what's in the best interest of his team. If he feels that's in the best interest of his team, I know the shift was too, and they had to ban that, and I was all for banning the shift.
Really?
Yeah, so 100%.
No.
Yeah, I'm 100% for banning
the shift. Banning the shift to me is like banning play action in football. Like, oh, he's tricking us. He's faking a handoff.
I disagree.
Hit the ball the other way.
Yeah, the players, they weren't doing it. Coaching it. Yeah, but they weren't doing it. They weren't coaching it. It's not
that
the way.
How long? Strikeouts right there.
Yeah, but how long do I have to watch? Like, it wasn't working. I said the same thing when the shift first came into prominence. I'm still not using that word correctly.
Prominence.
Thank you very much. When it first came into prominence, I said the same thing. Oh, well, listen, they'll beat it. They'll go the other way. They weren't. Nobody was. We were just beating ground balls into the ground. And I have no problem with the position is the position. I really don't have any problem with that. I wouldn't even have a problem going further and drawing a big circle and saying, this is the third base position. This is the second base position. This is shortstop. This is first base. Like, I wouldn't even have a problem with that. Like, I think it's, I want to watch a ground ball up the middle and see it be a single again. It's like, it's gotten crazy. Ground balls are just designated outs. So I was all for changing the shift. I don't know how you legislate this necessarily. I mean, I'm open to it because I'm always up for what's best for the game. I don't know how you say, hey, you've got to keep him in. Like, and God, like, if it's a big game, right? It's a big game. And I have a pitcher like Nestor Cortez, and he's managed to get through five innings. But he's at 90 pitches. He's given up three runs. The middle of the order, all right-handed, is coming up. And I know what he does against the third time through the lineup. I have to keep him in until he throws another 10 pitches? I'm not allowed to do what's best for my team and bring in a better pitcher in that moment? You tell me a big game, end of the year, Yankees-Orioles at Yankee Stadium battling for the division. I have to put out my lesser pitcher? I have to give myself a less of an opportunity to get through that next inning? Now, I know the other team has to do the same thing, but that's crazy to me. The idea I can't go to my bullpen, if I have it lined up, if I have my guys rested, if I have someone who throws 99 miles an hour right-handed to go through the heart of the Boston lineup, the Baltimore lineup, and instead, because Nestor Cortez, for whatever reason, hasn't met your qualification for being, you know, able to be taken out before the sixth inning, I think that's nuts. That I gotta knowingly give myself a less chance to be successful? I mean, that's, I don't know if I can do that one. That might be a bridge too far for me, even if it is for the benefit of the game over the course of a season. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. 3 hours down, two more to go. We still got some things I want to get to. I want to get to Brady. I got to tell you the Buffalo wing story that I find fascinating. And then, of course, a little bit of football as well. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you on the fan.